for everybody right there. Run game, pass game, offense, defense, special teams. I appreciate everyone in here.
Hey, man, hey, we answered the challenge I have, man. I told y'all, a full 60 minutes and we did that, bro. I love the hell out of every single person in here. Now let's go on a f***ing roll. Let's take care of each other.
One, two, three.
Let me just tell you something real quick. First of all, I'm getting pretty damn used to coming back in this home locker room with the same old feeling. Give it up for yourself. Yeah. I
appreciate every one of you. Okay. The difference between this league and our team is we got Derrick Henry. Okay? Congratulations. Hey. Hey.
That's what it should look like. Got a long way to go. Everybody with me on that?
Yes, sir.
Hey, hell of a job sticking together. Hell of a job battling. Feels good to win a football game.
Definitely feels win. Start again. Definitely feels good to win a football game when you haven't done it very often. I act like I haven't spoken very often on live TV / radio / podcast, although it's rarely ever live in that context. It's PFT Live, presented by Google Pixel. Learn more, as always, at googlestore.com. Good morning, Miles Simmons. I'm here in studio. I'm into my every other week routine of making the trek from West Virginia to Stamford, Connecticut. Here with you. I get here early, like 15 minutes before showtime. I don't know what to do with myself. I'm so accustomed to like slipping into the chair just as we're in black 30 seconds before the show begins. It's kind of a weird feeling. Kind of like it though. Like being punctual. Good morning.
Do you? Yeah. I like it because I enjoy a little cross-talk conversation just about nothing, you know, before we get going. It kind of sets the mood.
We talked about various important things, beginning with the fact that you are dressed for Halloween as Michael J. Fox from Back to the Future. We've established that. Dork's going to drown. He's wearing his life preserver.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I guess, you know, it's funny because somebody used to say that when I used to wear this vest before, and I've had it for a little while. It's one of my favorite clothing items. And it's getting a little colder here in Los Angeles, you know. You start to feel that chill, that ocean breeze gets a little nippier. I like it. There's no leaves changing out here, so that's basically the only way you can tell that it's fall. So, yeah, I love my little life preserver vest, even though I have no idea what that reference is other than you're referencing Back to the Future, which I still have never seen.
That's right, and you are defying me, and that's fine. One of these days, the planets will align in a manner that results in you having no choice but to watch Back to the Future.
At the Super Bowl, you're going to hold my eyes open like
Clockwork
that guy
orange.
In Bird Box.
Clockwork
yeah,
orange.
Well, that's
don't even okay, need to do it with your fingers. I've used that GIF before.
I don't know what that is either.
Clockwork orange when they had a little contraption to hold the eyes open to force.
Oh.
I think it was Malcolm McDowell. It was a group of British hooligans who wreaked havoc all over the countryside, and this was the way to desensitize them to it or get them to I don't know. I can't remember. It's an old movie, and I haven't seen it in a very long time. But that's a very jarring image where they hold their eyes open with these little clamps, reverse clamps.
That's why I was referencing Bird Box. It's a little more modern of a reference, you know?
Yeah.
And British hooligans, the only British hooligans I know are the ones that tell Packers fans to shove their cheese.
Well, you know, that cheese has been stuck up there for several weeks now. The Packers may need a laxative, frankly. And they get one next week in the form of the Detroit Lions. So if they can't win that one, if they may never win another game in the history of the franchise. Let's start there. Sunday Night Football, as we often do, except when it's the Dolphins, because I hate the Dolphins. So I ignored their win last week over the Steelers for pretty much the whole show. At least that was the feedback that I got. And it's so funny how this goes. Let me grant me 30 seconds or less or maybe more.
I'll sit back.
So one of the reasons I can deal with the hostility that I experience sometimes in this position, whether it's on Twitter in the comments, anytime somebody emails me something like that, you hate the Dolphins and F this and F that and filth and flar and filth. If I respond, the next response back is like we're best friends. It's like, what happened to that other person that was telling me what a worthless piece of crap I am? But as I told my wife the first time she ever made the mistake of reviewing the comments posted at PFT, the passion that gets people to say those things is the passion that draws them to the sport, brings them to our place of business in the first place. So I can deal with the venom because I know that it's just kind of a facade, that's just the way people get. They get passionate about their teams and they get upset when their teams aren't getting appropriate respect from those of us who are supposed to be completely objective and neutral. And anytime we say anything remotely negative about their team, Miles, we hate their team, we hate their city, we hate their families, we hate them personally. That's the conclusion that they draw.
Yeah, I know. Well, and I can tell you that the only franchise I truly hate is the Ratbirds that reside in Baltimore, but I still say plenty of nice things about their team anyway.
You mean the team that used to be the Browns, that once was the Browns?
Yes, exactly. Yes, the team that has our Hall of Fame tight end as its general manager emeritus, or whatever they call him these days, Ozzie Newsome. Yes, that team. Yeah.
And the team that actually fired Bill Belichick, but these Browns get blamed for firing Bill Belichick.
Exactly. Yes, it's true. The unnamed Baltimore franchise fired Bill Belichick in February 1996. But it's always, oh, the Browns fired Bill Belichick. No, he didn't. Congratulations, Bill
that's
Belichick, on passing George Halas.
I don't know. That's what you've been workshopping that? I don't know who that's supposed to be, but it's better than this. Although I kind of like that. I've gotten used to that. I got to be careful on this chair. I'll fall right off of it.
But, yeah.
All right. Let's get to it. Bills win their fourth in a row. Packers lose their fourth in a row. Holy crap. Now, we expected this from the Bills. At one point, we thought this game, week 8, Sunday night, would be kind of like maybe a Super Bowl preview. No, unless we just focus on, you know, one of the two teams involved in the Super Bowl. The Bills, 6-1, best record in the AFC. Josh Allen doing Josh Allen things. Not a huge night, but good enough. 218 passing yards, couple of touchdowns, also two picks. Kept it from being a blowout. Stephon Diggs had a big night. And, you know, I don't know what the closing line was. I think it was more than 10. Final score 27-17. If it was more than 10, obviously the Packers cover. If it was right on 10, it's a push and the house keeps the vig. But I expected it to be worse than it was, and it felt like it was going to be worse than it was. I almost feel like Buffalo's foot slipped off the gas pedal in the second half, and they just really didn't. They never felt compelled to try to put it back on.
You know what's funny? Sometimes teams, when you're so good like that, sometimes you get bored a little bit. And that's kind of what it felt like to me. I mean, you talk about Josh Allen's night. I mean, those two picks were just kind of inexplicably bad throws. There were some throws he missed toward the end of the game as well. And I mean, I think he told Melissa Stark after the game that game felt gross to him as the terms of a win. And that's what you can do when you're one of those really, really good teams. You kind of have the ability to mess around a little bit. I mean, like, that pick right there is just something that's bad from Josh Allen. You're early on in the fourth quarter. You really just want to go down the field, get some points, get a touchdown, seal the win, and then everybody's happy and everybody's going home, and you can put in Case Keenum and you can feel good about yourself for the rest of the night. They weren't able to do that. You know, the Bills were not able to really shut that thing down and definitively put it away in the way that they really should have done. So I don't know if they're just getting a little bit bored or what, but that's the kind of thing where you can get away with that in the middle of the season when you're playing a Green Bay Packers team that is clearly not at your caliber. But if you're not putting teams away when you get to late December into January, then that's going to turn into a problem. But for yesterday, it obviously was not.
Yeah, but you're right. That's the kind of performance where if you're not careful, it disrupts you on your path to the inevitable rematch, otherwise inevitable rematch, with the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's continues to be my big concern, that one of those two teams, Chiefs, Bills, stub their toe, lose a game, and rob everyone, including themselves, of what would be an epic AFC championship. Well, who knows? Our expectations are probably too high at this point. I don't know that they can get any higher after what we saw from those two teams last year, but we all expect them, hope that they will cross paths again. All due respect to the other teams in the AFC that would like to keep that from happening. The Bills have shown signs, though, of the ability. And I keep looking for a dominant team. And there's this argument now, the Bills are better than the Eagles, even though the Bills have a loss and the Eagles don't. I saw Peter King has the Bills ahead of the Eagles. He's done a rough ranking of the 32 teams almost halfway through the season. I still put weight in being unbeaten. And, you know, the quality that we saw yesterday, last night from the Bills, that contributed to what happened to them when they lost their only game, September 25 against Miami. They ridiculously outplayed the Dolphins, but it's just enough of a little lackadaisical quality to their play that creates an opening for someone to beat them. And, you know, the Eagles, and we'll talk about the Eagles later, but they were facing an opponent that could have been very dangerous yesterday, and they won by 22. They didn't screw around. They didn't mess around. They didn't put themselves in a position where it could even be a conversation of that team possibly coming back and making it a game and or beating them. And that's where the Bills need to aspire to be if they want to comfortably be the number one seed in the AFC.
Well, right. Yes. And that's what I mean by when I'm talking about Josh Allen and, you know, him talking about it feeling gross and those throws and it's this and it's that. And I like Josh Allen. I like the way he plays. I think he's a great, great player. But I think that there are sometimes those lapses where he like gets back into 2018 Josh Allen, you know, 2019 Josh Allen, where you just saw him kind of make errors that you just aren't accustomed to him making anymore. And, you know, when you have the kind of weapons that he has with Stephon Diggs, with Gabe Davis, with McKenzie, you know, all these guys that are really, really good, Dawson Knox, you just expect that level of play to be at a certain height, right? And when it doesn't get there and you see that these turnovers keep the other team in the game when that other team really did not have a shot. I mean, look, the Packers, as much as they have Aaron Rodgers and as good as Aaron Rodgers can be, they don't have the horses right now. So when you have a situation like that, you want to be like the Eagles where you remove all doubt earlier on in that matchup so that you're not coming down the stretch. And it's kind of like, uh-oh, you know, wait, there might be this little sliver of an opening for Aaron Rodgers to do, you know, holy Aaron Rodgers stuff. And then, you know, we're in a really bad spot. You just don't want that to happen. So I think that the Bills are good. You know, we can say, like, whether or not they're better than the Eagles. I mean, it's hard for me to say that I'm picking any team over Josh Allen right now, given how I know how well Josh Allen can play, even though the Eagles are really, really, really good. And Jalen Hurts is playing as good as anybody. But it's just this ability right here, where it's 3rd and 14, and Josh Allen doesn't necessarily have anybody to throw the ball to. And he's just like, hey, guys, hey, block for me, all right? I'm just going to lower my shoulder a little bit. I'm going to run it down the field. I was shocked that he didn't get into the end zone right there, because usually he does. But then he has this option right here, too, where it's like, oh, I think he's going to run. I think he's going to run. No, he flips the ball to the end zone, and he's hitting Dawson Knox, and it's a better play for him, because he's preserving his body a little bit more. And that's one of those things we kept talking about early on in the season. I mean, how many times is Josh Allen going to take those hits? When he's making plays like that, where he's making you think that he's going to run and then he flips it into the end zone, sort of a la Patrick Mahomes, that's just a better football play, I think, if you're a QB.
I think to summarize my feelings on the Bills, and we agree on this, I believe, when you get their full focus, if they were to play the Eagles this week, they wouldn't screw around and find out. They wouldn't put themselves in a position where they potentially would be vulnerable. They are susceptible to losing in a game where they're not locked in. When they're locked in, they can beat anybody. When they're not locked in, they can lose to anybody. And even though last night's game was never in serious doubt, it never felt like the ass-kicking that I thought it was going to be. Changing the guard statement game. It just wasn't. And one of the reasons it wasn't, we'll flip it over to the Packers now. Got to give them credit for their game plan. And at one point last week when Sims and I were riffing on whatever the Packers may or may not do, I said, you know, you're actually in a spot where you're better off just trying to run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, and keep Josh Allen and company on the sidelines. And you look at the numbers from the Green Bay offense, they ran the ball plenty. When you consider that you've got Aaron Rodgers, 20 rushes by Aaron Jones for 143 yards, 10 from A.J. Dillon for 54, 30 total passes from Aaron Rodgers. You don't expect that kind of 50-50 balance from a team that's got a franchise quarterback. But if the goal is, ultimately, to control one statistic, points scored versus points allowed, that's kind of the way you have to play the Bills, and they didn't even get away from it when it was 27-10. They kept with that formula. They had this faith that this is the way to do it. And maybe at some level, Miles, what they were trying to do was avoid 45-10, was avoid having the floodgates open. You don't want a demoralizing loss. You know, they say there's no such thing as moral victories. You hear that all the time. But I think there's a real difference for this Packers team to having the crap kicked out of them by the Bills versus playing them within the spread, within the margin. So you come away from it, because I continue to believe very strongly that the Packers, if they get to the playoffs as a wild card, 6 seed, 7 seed range in the NFC, and they still could.
Yeah.
They could be very dangerous in January. We saw them win the Super Bowl as the last team in 2010. I think the mindset that Aaron Rodgers articulated last week about we can play freer as the underdog, it's kind of good to be the underdog, I think that actually helps them in the postseason, because when they're the one seed, they seize up. We got too much to lose. All those weeks of work, everything that we built, it's all in jeopardy now as we host the 49ers in the divisional round, a team that we are better than in all phases except special teams, which was the problem. But I really do think, and that's what they're on track for now at 3-5, to get in the hard way and then give everyone a hard time once they get there.
I mean, you talk about moral victories, and I don't know much of this is a moral victory or not, but when you are able to run the ball like that, it seems like they kind of found something, right? And even though that didn't work last night against the Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Bills aren't on your schedule for the rest of the season unless you make it to the biggest stage, right? So I think in doing that, they probably did find a little something offensively where they can finally get some rhythm, finally get, I don't know, a little bit of continuity going, a little bit of just flow and something that they can take into next week and then the next week and then the next week and start stacking those blocks off of that. Because when you run the ball that well and you still have a quarterback who can throw it as Aaron Rodgers can throw it, that opens up really everything for your offense, because it means that the linebackers can't just stay steady and wait for, you know, somebody to try to come open on the second level. Like, you have to come up and try to stop the run. I think it's great you mentioned, you know, that they've got the Detroit Lions next week. Look, that's a struggling football team, okay? So if you can't go out there, run the ball, execute your plan against them, then you're not going to get it right, probably. So I think that establishing the fact that you can really run the ball when you want to against a team like the Buffalo Bills, then we'll have you be able to say in this coming week, all right, let's build off of that. What can we do where we know we can run the ball effectively, and let's get after one of these division rivals that we have? I think the Packers might have found something last night, even in that loss.
There are no moral victories, but you can get demoralized. And it could have been a demoralizing loss last night for the Packers, where they just feel like that's it, it's done, it's over. It's not. Even though they lost, it's not over. Let's hear a little bit from Bills pass rusher Von Miller on the fact that the Packers utilized an offensive game plan so heavily reliant on the run.
You know, I was shocked that they ran the ball so much. You know, they had Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, I was just, you know, by previous bouts, you know, I was just expecting him to, you know, have a little bit more control. So I was kind of anticipating him, you know, passing the ball a little bit more, and they just kept running and running and running. And I think, you know, for me personally, it just caught me off guard, and I had, like, some lanes open where they could run the ball and stuff, because, you know, I was just playing the pass. I'm looking at the scoreboard, and I'm seeing that we're up by 17 points, and, you know, it's 2 minutes left in the third quarter, and I'm, you know, thinking that, you know, they got to start passing the ball soon, but nope. They just kept running, and they ran the ball well.
I think I figured out Von Miller's Halloween costume based upon
what's
what he
that?
Combination of Elmer Fudd, Kirk Cousins, Browns fan. That's my it's a trifecta for Von Miller.
Where does the chain fit into all
that? That's Kirk Cousins. He's making fun of Kirk Cousins with all, you know, we see him with they have him wear the chains now, like on the coming back from Miami. You got to keep up with the sport that you cover. Kirk Cousins wearing the chains. That's a thing now. All right. Well, and you know, the other side of this too, the Bills have to because what are teams going to do? They're going to be exploring. They're going to be probing. They're going to be looking for anything they can use to try to beat the Bills. So yeah. Now you got to think about upcoming opponents. Run heavy. Hey, my son, who is drinking the purple Kool-Aid in Minneapolis, as much as I tell him, it's just like the other Kool-Aid that they drank some 43 years ago. It's not going to nourish you in any way, shape, or form. Is it enough time has passed that we can make light of that? Anyway, the Vikings go to Buffalo in 2 weeks, and I told my son as he was exulting about the fact that the Vikings beat the Cardinals yesterday, the ass kicking is just 14 days away, now 13 days. And he gets mad at me. But you know what? They got Dalvin Cook and they got Alexander Mattison. Maybe they try the same thing. Run heavy. Keep Josh Allen off the field.
Yeah.
Get him a little frustrated. Maybe get them to think that, you know, even though the Vikings are the most fraudulent 6-1 team I've ever seen, and maybe if the Bills agree with me, they're not as locked in. They're not as focused. It's not like the Eagles are coming to town. So maybe there's something there. A glimmer of a blueprint. Usually we seize on blueprints if they result in a victory. Maybe this is a glimmer of something you can try to do against the Bills. Run the ball, control the clock, keep Josh Allen on the sidelines. It didn't work for the Packers, but it kept them from losing by 30 or more points.
Well, I think it didn't work for the Packers. I'm going back to what Von Miller was saying, is because they don't have the horses on the outside, at least at this point, who can really beat you in terms of the wide receivers. I mean, think about who wasn't out there last night and all these people that Aaron Rodgers doesn't have the established trust with, right? Randall Cobb is on injured reserve. Alan Lazard wasn't playing. He has a shoulder injury. You got Christian Watson. He went out with a concussion very early on in the game. And I don't even know if Aaron Rodgers trusts him all that much. So, I mean, you're getting Romeo Doubs coming up with a huge play in the end zone. Obviously, he gets that touchdown.
I mean, unbelievable,
it's like,
catch.
Oh, yeah. Therefore, art thou Romeo, right? My goodness. I mean, that's an outstanding catch.
I don't understand
the best
that
catch
reference.
You'll ever see. Well, yes. Well, that's because you don't understand Shakespeare. You know, that's what that is right there. Anyway, I feel like if you can get more plays like that, then yeah, you're going to throw it more on the outside, but it's just that they don't have that chemistry yet. So what are you going to do? You're going to run the ball because that's the way you feel like you can move it. So there's just not that chemistry, established timing that you have with your guys yet when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers. But I mean, if Dobbs can keep making plays like this and the one that he had in the end zone too, then yeah, that's going to come along quicker. And I guess I should mention Sammy Watkins too is another one of those guys. But like I said, it's just the chemistry's not there yet. But if you make plays like that, then that's going to help it.
The theory / hot take that Sims and I have been cooking up ties Aaron Rodgers' unwillingness to trust his young receivers with his unwillingness to jeopardize his one claim as being the greatest of all time, that ridiculous touchdown to interception ratio, those specialty stats that people look at and say, this is the proof that he is the one, even though he only has one Super Bowl championship. He has some other path to making the argument of GOAT status. He doesn't want to undermine that this year by just throwing the ball into coverage, not knowing whether or not his receiver is going to, you know, actually catch the ball or the defensive back is going to catch it. So I think they got a little something going on. And I also liked, I don't typically condone the chippiness. I liked seeing a little chippiness from the Packers last night. You know, when you have a team that's kind of sleepwalking through the season, you have a quarterback who calls guys out for mental mistakes, you could very easily turn within yourself and implode, but they expressed that outwardly. Jaire Alexander getting into it with Stephon Diggs repeatedly. Now, look, the Packers lost, but they're not backing down to anybody, even one of the best receivers right now in football. And yes, it ended up being a victory for Stephon Diggs, and Stephon Diggs isn't going to back down, but I kind of liked it. We even saw it late in the game, down 10, defensive linemen chirping at the Bills. I like that spirit. I like to see a little emotion. Again, I don't like it when it crosses the line into anything extracurricular, but football's an emotional sport. I like seeing some of that happen from a team that is otherwise dangerously moving toward, let's just start thinking about next season territory.
Yeah, there's chippiness, and then there's shoving a practice squad player on the sideline that gets you ejected.
Not
right?
ideal.
Yeah.
Who's trying to help you up? Who was trying to help you up?
I know. Like, talk about overreaction, bro. Like, calm down a little bit, man. But that's – and Matt LaFleur said that that's something that's unacceptable, right? He has zero tolerance for that, and that's right. So – You have to toe that line.
I don't think zero tolerance means it means what he thinks. If he has zero tolerance for it, that means he's going to cut the guy today.
I mean, like,
it's easy to say zero tolerance. Right? It's harder to actually live zero tolerance. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, fair enough. Yes, but I think, you know, when you're talking about a game and then the guy gets himself ejected, then yeah, you can't have any tolerance for that kind of behavior.
Well, you have no choice. You have no choice. He's been ejected. You can't give him a pass.
Yes, it's not. Yeah, this is kind of, I guess it is also sort of easy to say that you don't have any tolerance for it when the decision about tolerance is taken out of your hands. But yeah, I mean, you had to play with an edge if you're the Packers, right? I mean, at this point, you are kind of an underdog going into different things. You're an underdog. You're not probably going to win the division. I mean, you're so far behind in that to the Vikings. So
they'll find a way to blow it.
You have to go and you have to.
I've seen this movie before. The Vikings will find a way. They'll find a way.
I mean, I understand this mentality that you've got, but you know what? Like, if you're winning, you got to just stand there and be like, all right, come at me, man. It's the same mentality I was talking about with my mom a couple years ago when the Browns were actually good. A lot of good that did us, you know, in a couple years ago in 2020, but still, you know, like, when you're good, you got to get to stand there and stand tall and be like, you know what? This is who we are this year. You know, let's go bring it. We want Houston if you're the Yankees, and then you get swept.
Yeah. Okay.
Shout out baseball.
Yes. What's going on in the World Series anyway?
It's 1-1. The series shifts to Philly tonight. Yeah.
They play tonight. Mm-hmm. They're going up against Browns, Bengals. How dare they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's better that than Sunday Night Football, I guess.
Yeah. All right. One last thing before we move on to the next game. We do have to hear Stephon Diggs talking about the beef with Jaire Alexander, because I always love to hear from Stephon Diggs on any topic, but I have a feeling on this one it'll be worth your time. Let's have a listen.
I don't care who started. I finished it. You know what I'm saying? I got a win. I got the win. It's not a I don't deal with more victories. I don't deal with one-on-one battles, because this is not a one-on-one game. We're not out there playing 7-on-7, and this is not one-on-ones. If that's the case, I'm by myself. But it's a team effort. You know what I'm saying? I got a dub.
Stephon Diggs also looked like he messed up his shoulder at one point, came down hard, and then there was a clip of him on the sideline. He bit his tongue, and it, like, you could see the blood in his mouth. And
yeah.
I thought of a movie character who got his tongue frozen or stuck to a frozen flagpole. Do you get that?
Christmas Story.
Do you get that? All right, that's good. It was
filmed
in
Cleveland,
80s.
Baby. I get that.
Filmed in Cleveland. It was Cleveland Street. It wasn't Cleveland, though. The setting was the setting Cleveland in the movie? I don't think they ever said.
The setting,
but it was Cleveland Street.
It's like a random city in Indiana that may or may not be made up. But yes, it was filmed in Cleveland, and downtown Cleveland figures heavily, especially in the opening of that movie where they're showing the Higbee building.
Higbee's.
Oh, yeah.
I always think of that movie whenever the Rams tight end Tyler Higbee does anything. Higbee's department
what
store.
What a broadcasting pro you are as we segue to our next game.
That's right. The Rams losing yet again. And it's so funny because when one team owns another team as thoroughly as the 49ers own the Rams, everybody wants to get ahead of the moment where it changes. And of course, it did change in the game that counted the most that it could count when they met in the playoffs. But regular season, Kyle Shanahan just systematically takes down Sean McVay every time they get together. And, this is the time the Rams are going to change. They had a bye week. They had extra time. It just doesn't matter if your players aren't as good as they need to be. And for the 49ers, the one key is health. And the 49ers are the team in the NFC that could beat anyone. They could beat the Bills. They could beat the Eagles. They could beat anyone. I think they would beat the Vikings, frankly, by 10 or more if they crossed paths. The 49ers are going to be built. If they can keep their people healthy, McCaffrey, Bosa, Hufanga, the key players, Kittle, Debo. Hell, they got it done yesterday without Debo. But if they keep enough, a critical mass of their key players healthy, they can beat anyone. And we saw that yesterday. And Christian McCaffrey paying dividends.
Woo!
First time since 2005 that in the same game there's been, by one player, touchdown pass, touchdown reception, touchdown run. LaDainian Tomlinson did it back in 05. Look at that catch from Christian McCaffrey. I mean,
awesome.
Again, there's no denying his talent. I wrote that the night that the trade happened. If he's healthy, he's unstoppable. But running backs get injured. It's not about them. It's about the position. You're getting hit from every angle. You've got 300-pound guys. The physics don't help you. It just feels inevitable. The question is, can you stave it off through the end of the regular season and through the postseason? And if they can, Christian McCaffrey is going to help the 49ers do everything that they've been trying to do the past several years.
Yeah, it's funny, though, Mike. I mean, I always say this, especially since 2019, basically. The Rams are never as bad as they look against the 49ers, and the 49ers, especially Jimmy Garoppolo, are never as good as they look against the Rams. And so that's going to be the issue. Can they really sustain this high level of play? Because if you look at it, okay, Kyle Shanahan is 9-3 against Sean McVay and 34-43 against everybody else. And Sean McVay is 3-9 against Kyle Shanahan and 55-21 against everybody else in the league. Pick that up from Greg Beecham of the Associated Press, who tweeted that out last night. So look, it looked great for the 49ers yesterday. And Jimmy Garoppolo completing 84% of his passes. It's the best completion rate since Steve Young in 1997 for a 49ers quarterback. That's amazing. But that's just them against the Rams. Let's see them against another team. Let's see them against another team in the NFC West. That's why I tweeted out last night, like, when do the 49ers and the Seahawks play again? Because to me, that's more of what this is going to be about. Because Jimmy Garoppolo, George Kittle, they always play great against Los Angeles. They always play great in Levi's South, as they love to call it, because that stadium yesterday was full of red and it sounded like a 49ers home game. Okay, and it just does. That's the way it works here in LA with that team and those teams where they play, you know, whenever they play. So let's see him do it against somebody else. Because, yeah, Christian McCaffrey is great, and Christian McCaffrey is going to be able to make those kinds of plays against anybody, probably. But is Jimmy Garoppolo going to play like that against everybody? I mean, evidence says no, he's not. That's why they went out and they got Trey Lance in the first place. So I'm pumping the brakes on the 49ers a little bit, even though I do think they should be very good. I don't know if they're actually going to be very good.
Well, look, one of the big factors in how good they will be is their schedule. They go into their bye week now. They've got the Chargers. They're at the Cardinals, Saints, Dolphins, Buccaneers, at the Seahawks, week 15. That is a Thursday night game. Hello, Washington yeah. Commanders, at the Raiders, Cardinals. There's a lot of games there
that's
that
a lot
are
of
winnable
wins.
For the 49ers. And as I said, this is a very dangerous team in January if they're healthy. They're a very dangerous team week in and week out. They're one of the few teams that is capable of being dominant if they're healthy. And
but they can also lose, Mike. I mean, they a couple weeks ago, they just got blasted by the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, it's because, again, when that critical mass of players
healthy,
is injured,
yeah.
That's the key. It's just if just enough guys are hurt, they fall apart. And I fell victim to thinking it's the 49ers. They're rounding into form. They're playing well. I don't care that a few key players are injured. Kyle Shanahan will find a way. It's just, when they're missing a certain number of guys, that's when it happens. And they did.
Mike Vrabel finds a way. I don't know.
Well, Vrabel does. Shanahan needs to figure out how to do it. Because at some point between now and week 18 and or the playoffs, they will have a game where they've got to dig deep. Christian McCaffrey, and I'm not, you're jinxing him. Look, the guy plays running back. By virtue of, he jinxes himself by playing running back. You're asking for it. It's just a matter of time. It's one of the great areas of respect I have for all professional athletes, all football players, especially running backs. You put in all that time and effort to fine-tune your body, and you know what's going to happen to it. At some point, something's going to break, and you got to go back, get it fixed, rehab, work, fine tune and hone your body again, and then go do it all over again, knowing full well you're going to be back in that same spot, and it's lather, rinse, repeat. I want to address one thing you said, though, because I continue to be fascinated by the L.A. dynamic. Sean McVay, okay, Rams coach, said on Friday that the 49ers fans travel well. And
they do.
Well, but they're not traveling, though. How many of them are actually coming down from San Francisco, and how many of them are already in L.A.? Because the NFL abandoned the market for 20 years. This is a fundamental component. The NFL never should have left L.A. Because when you take away both teams and no one's there for a generation, and you're still going to broadcast your games in L.A., what happens? You lock onto whatever team you just choose to lock onto. And in a huge market like that, you're going to have a significant nucleus of 49ers fans, of Chiefs fans, of Steelers fans, of Cowboys fans when they're going to Oxnard every year for training camp, of every team except for a select few, and they know who they are. You're going to have that. So when that team comes to town, those fans are going to overpower the fans of the home team. Because where's the natural fan base of the home team? Even after the Rams win the freaking Super Bowl, there aren't enough dedicated Ram fans to refuse to sell their tickets to the 49ers fans who are anxious to come watch the 49ers play. I don't know what it's going to take. And maybe it's going to take 20 years to reverse it. I don't know. Yeah. But that's the product. I thank you for indulging me while I make that point. But that's the product of abandoning the market for 20 years. The Rams
absolutely
fans may go ahead. I'll let you comment on that before. But,
I mean, having worked for the organization in question right here with the Los Angeles Rams, obviously it's something that you just have to deal with, right? I mean, their money's green too. So those tickets are sold.
Stan doesn't care.
Great,
Stan doesn't care. And now all these teams are getting a taste every time they do the resale transaction.
But right, exactly. So like it's one of those things where their money is green. So like yes, can welcome on in. But at the same time, you know, if you're the marketing team, you're kind of like I don't like seeing all this red here, you know. And then eventually, it's kind of be like, man, why is there all this red? Like, why is it that we have to go silent count if you're the Rams, right? You're thinking, man, we have to go silent count here at home, but Jimmy Garoppolo is going out with his verbal cadence. It's annoying. It's one of those things that you kind of just have to deal with. And I think after this time that Sean McVay has been in this city and been coaching here, he understands what the dynamic is going to be. So it just kind of is what it is. But it's one of those things where you're right. If you abandon this market as the NFL did for as long as it did, right, you're not going to have those built-in Rams fans. You're not going to have those built-in Chargers fans. Those folks are, you know, hours down the five in San Diego. That's where those people live. So, you know, it's going to take time. It is going to take probably a generation to really build up the Rams fan base. It certainly does not hurt when you win a Super Bowl and you can put up those banners in SoFi Stadium, but it's not going to happen overnight. The Rams know that. I know the Rams know that.
By the way, one last point on the 49ers. There's another item we need to take care of with the Rams. As to the 49ers, though, I think I asked Peter King. I know I asked him on Friday the over-under on touches for Christian McCaffrey in his second game.
Oh, you did? Yes, I listened. Yes,
and I think he said 26. Because 26 is what he had. So kudos to Peter King.
Hang on.
18 rushes. Well, actually, it's 27. Does the pass count as a touch? 18 rushes.
I don't know.
8 receptions and 1 pass. So 26 touches plus a throw. Only 10 days after being traded by the Carolina Panthers. And now he has 2 weeks to get ready for their next game against the Chargers. They won't be back at SoFi for that one, though. The Chargers come to Levi's Stadium, the not home away from home for the San Francisco 49ers. All right, bad news for the Rams, potentially. We don't know how this is going to play out. And we're in the studio last night, either getting ready for the show, the show starts, and they've got monitors, and we're watching. And I saw somebody on the ground for the Rams. It's like, I think that's number 10. That's not good if that's number 10. And then they show the replay, and he goes down. His leg gets caught. You can see the look on his face. Ankle injury for Cooper Kupp. Look at the bottom of the screen. Look at the situation. 31-14 with under a minute and a half to play. What are you doing with your best players out there? Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp. Why? There's a certain point where you just need to throw in the towel because this is what happens. And Sean McVay knows it. He comes straight out to see what's up with Cooper Kupp. You see it there. You see his face. Leg gets caught. Ankle injury. Let's hear Sean McVay after the game talking about what happened to Cooper Kupp with just a minute left in the contest.
I'm not sure. You know, that's why he wanted to try to be smart getting out of the game. And I'm kicking myself for, you know, not running the football again. But I'm hopeful that he's okay. It looked like it was his ankle when I was out there with Dr. Elotron.
And it is the ankle. The ankle was wrapped in the locker room. That was the account from reporters who were on the scene. And Cooper Kupp told reporters that he'll have to see how it responds over the next few days, but he thinks he dodged a bullet, which obviously great news for the Buccaneers. They go, or the Buccaneers, the Rams, they go to play the Buccaneers, excuse me, on Sunday in Tampa Bay. They need Cooper Kupp for that one. Who would have thought 3-4 versus 3-5 is what's looming?
Not
the
Fox.
Rams and the Buccaneers reprise their epic playoff game from last year when Tom Brady brought the Bucs all the way back and then the Tampa Bay defense allowed Matthew Stafford to connect with Kupp for the game-winning field goal. Kupp may not be playing in that game, and if he is, he may be hampered by that ankle injury, Miles.
Yeah, and that's just one of those situations where Sean McVay knows better, and he said he's kicking himself for it. And, I mean, look, Dan Campbell said it best. A true alpha knows when it's time to concede. The Rams should have been conceding in that situation, right? Get John Wolford out there or just run the ball with Malcolm Brown. Do something. Get out of
take
there.
Take knees
right?
at that because point. That game's just over. Take knees. It's over. You're not going to score 17 right. points in 90 seconds.
No.
It's over. Especially
it
doing that underneath stuff, right? I mean, if you're going to start uncorking Hail Marys and you're playing the very low percentages, fine. But they weren't even really trying to score there. It's just, you know, let's just run some reps. It's a lesson to every coach out there.
It is.
That the injury can happen, and it can happen to a key player. Get your key players off the field. Know when to concede. Take a page from the Dan Campbell playbook, and the true alpha knows when to concede. And
I love
Lions,
that.
It's probably time for the Lions to concede in more ways than one. Let's take a break. We won't be talking about the Lions when we return. We'll be talking about how the top teams in the NFC keep rolling along. We'll do that when this Monday edition of PFT Live, presented by Google Pixel, continues right after this.